Okay. Go.
Interesting thing in Haggadah is that it first says, Yochol Merosh Chodesh. That I would have thought that we can celebrate Pesach starting with Rosh Chodesh. And then it says Tamid Lomer, but then the verse says, by Yom Ahu, know that we have to wait for the night where we have matzah and mor in front of us. Why would I think you could celebrate Pesach from Rosh Chodesh? Rosh Chodesh, we haven't left yet. It's Rosh Chodesh is still early. So Rabbi Feinstein says an interesting thing. He says the promise that we would leave was given to us on Rosh Chodesh. And therefore, when God gives you a promise, it's as if it's here already. You can't do any better than God's promise. If Hashem tells you you got something, imagine you buy a lottery ticket. It's the grand lotto. It's the lottery of all lotteries. It's the 50 million, 100 million, whatever you want. And they told you you have the winning ticket. You celebrate. You don't wait. You know it'll be a few weeks till you actually get the check in your hand. But once you've confirmed that you've got the winning ticket, it's a party time. It's terrific. It's exciting. So here, we have Hashem's promise already from Rosh Chodesh. So when Hashem promises you something, it's here already. And so therefore, even though it's not Pesach yet, the days before Pesach have something special to them, because Hashem's promise that will be redeemed is as good as gold. And so it's as if the redemption starts early. So therefore, the time before Pesach is very special. We also find Pesach is probably the holiday we put the most effort into. It takes longer to get ready for Pesach than it does anything else. We do the most effort into providing the foods for Pesach. And the results are, though, that it is probably the most commonly practiced Jewish ritual. That people that are even the farthest away from Judaism, they still celebrate Pesach. That things that people remember about growing up and about their grandparents are the Pesach Seder. And so it's true that in the early stages it's a lot of work and a lot of money, but it's well worth it. It's a time of redemption, and the more effort we put in, then the more results hopefully we can see. Okay. We've actually done this before, so I thought I would do something a little different. I would start from the back end. Usually I talk about how we get the kitchen kosher for Pesach. I thought I would start with some of the foods first and then work our way back into the kitchen. The most common mistake that people make regarding Pesach is that the same foods that are kosher for Pesach, sometimes there are very similar varieties that are not kosher for Pesach. And this is very common because all of the places where we buy our Pesach foods have non-kosher Pesach foods, whether it be in the supermarket, whether it be in quality. And some of the same companies that make Pesach products make non-Pesach products, and the packages are very similar. And sometimes people pick one up and they put the other on the shelf. And the last place you want to be is in a supermarket before Pesach, and it's hectic, and we grab for something. And very, very common that sometimes we pull something that doesn't actually have the Pesach marking. So, for example, Manischewitz makes two kinds of wine. Some of them have OUP, and some of them don't. So some of them are usable for Pesach, some of them are not. The Israeli products, it's very common. In Israel, nobody can afford to go out of business for 8 days. In America, if you're kosher year-round, you can just not sell kosher for Passover. But in Israel, almost every company that does kosher also does kosher for Passover. So almost all the Israeli products will come in two varieties. And so they're very similar. And so sometimes you'll see soup cubes. Some of them have a tiny, tiny OUP, and some of them don't. But it even gets more complicated than that. In Israel, the majority of the Jews there are Sephardim, and they use products like corn and rice and beans that Jews that are from the European countries do not use. And so many of the Israeli products, sometimes it will say kosher for Passover, but then in tiny Hebrew letters it will say only for Sephardim. And so if you're not Sephardim, then that won't help you. So you have to be very careful with the Israeli products. First of all, you want to make sure your product is the kosher for Passover product. Then you want to make sure it's kosher for Passover for you and not for somebody who's not an Ashkenazi, a Jew whose ancestors came from the European countries. We talked about the reason. Why is it that we don't eat corn and we don't eat rice? So there are several reasons given. Some is that these are similar to grains, and they make bread products out of them. There's rice cakes and cornbread that are similar to bread. But the most common reason is that they are farmed in the same places and stored in the same bins as grains. And so very commonly, if you buy corn or rice or other things, especially in the marketplaces that they had, that corn would be put in the same wagon that transferred it to the marketplace, and it would go in the same bucket or the same barrel. And very commonly, you'll have grains mixed in. And unlike the rest of the year, where you know a grain or two isn't that much, that wouldn't really bother us, for Pesach, we're concerned even about the smallest amount. And so, therefore, we avoid those things that come from the same farms and that are stored in the same bins and the same silos as grain. And so, therefore, the general custom is that Jews from the Ashkenazi countries avoid these kinds of things. We have some lists here of medications that are usable on Pesach, and you're welcome to, afterwards, to look through these books to see if your medications are on here. An interesting thing happened that... Since potentially many medications could use alcohol or could use starch, most medications have a starch in them, so people started writing letters to the companies to figure out which medications have chametz in them. And that was a terrific thing because in theory you could make sure, it says that if a person is careful not to eat a drop of chametz, then God will make sure you don't have a drop of sin. So if you can go 8 days without any drop of chametz, then Hashem will guard you the rest of the year for any drop of sin. And so that's a great thing. So you want to be careful that you're not popping those chametz in your mouth over Pesach. So people wrote letters to the drug companies, and they found out a lot about the drugs. And certainly if you have choices between two or three medications and you can get one that doesn't have chametz, that's terrific. But there's been a backlash. And that is that the Rabbanim were finding that a lot of people don't necessarily get one of these books. You know, usually all the rabbis get them, or they have them in the Jewish bookstores, but you can't always get a book that lists all the medications, and sometimes your medication isn't in the list. And sometimes, even if it's there, older people just don't have the time to check every single medication, and what was commonly done was that people will figure it's only 8 days, I'll skip it. And they were noticing in the larger communities that the doctors were complaining that there were more heart attacks and more high blood pressure and more issues because people would just say, well, for 8 days, I don't want to mess with it, I'll just skip it. And therefore, they felt that the good that was being done by helping people, you know, who had choices to choose which over-the-counter drug to take and which one not, was being outweighed by health, which is a primary mitzvah. And we have to keep that in mind also when we get ready for Pesach, that we have to guard our health and not... you know, not work, you know, not overdo it so that we don't enjoy the chag. So, therefore, the rabbis have issued new guidelines. And that is, first of all, that somebody shouldn't stop taking a medication unless they, you know, speak to their rabbi first. And that normally the person shouldn't forget to take care of their health and to guard their health. But basically, there is room for leniency on any pill that is taken. As long as it's not a chewable, not a vitamin, and it's not a liquid, there's room for leniency on the pill that even if the starch in it originally came from some kind of chametz, it's not in a form that a person would transgress popping the chametz in the mouth. So, therefore, really a person, you don't even have to look on the list anymore if it's just a prescription pill. If it's a chewable or a vitamin or a liquid, then you want to, or an over-the-counter kind of thing, then you definitely want to use the book and look the drugs up and make sure they're acceptable. That's as far as those drugs go.
Is that just for adults or children alike? I mean, if you're like, I have a 2-year-old who's on a daily antibiotic. So, should I check because Pesach and the whole family should observe it, or does it not, like... There's certain things that the kids don't do, like things that are
mukta,
she has no idea what that means.
Right. So I would say if it's if there's room, if it's something that's extra strict, there's no reason to be extra strict for a child. If it's something that is a requirement, then in other words, if it's a there are certain kinds of things like chewable things are a little stricter than non-chewables. So if it's just like an antibiotic they swallow, then I wouldn't even bother with it. But if it's a chewable, let's say vitamin or something that may be real harm, then I would probably take the time and look it up. That's as far as the pills. Now, as far as the over-the-counter things, so we're worried about that some of the over-the-counter things we don't think of as food, but that's just because we've never tried to eat them. They've known that, you know, people on plane crashes where there's no food around, they live off toothpaste, and they found that sailors, when they weren't allowed to have alcohol, used to drink perfume or cologne. And when the sailor got really drunk, you could smell the perfume on his breath. You'd say he's perfumed. And they'd go into town and be carefully... we don't think of our perfumes or our colognes as being edible, but really they are, or it's relatively easy to distill the alcohol off it. So therefore, it is recommended when we're dealing with antiperspirant or perfume or cologne to make sure it doesn't have a grain alcohol. Because we're not only are we not allowed, even if we don't plan on eating it, we're not supposed to benefit from chametz, and therefore we should avoid that. Now, there are other things that may contain chametz, like shampoo could have wheat germ, and there are some people that are careful not to use shampoos that have wheat germ. The OU came out with a list of things this year that they felt were no problem, and basically, once the wheat germ or whatever it would be is turned into like a cream form, you no longer have to worry about it because it's no longer in its original food form. And you can find that list here in the OU book, which there's some in the front and we have that as well. I'll just give you, it's a list of things that you don't have to worry about from a Passover perspective. Candles, charcoal. Now charcoal, by the way, sometimes does have wheat starch in it. But again, since it's burnt, it's not eaten, it's not a problem. Any kind of cream or gel, glass cleaner, hair gel, insecticides, jewelry polish, laundry detergents, oven cleaner, paper towels, plates, shampoos, silver polish, soaps, suntan lotion, talcum powder. None of these things you have to worry about for Pesach. Because again, most of them are no longer in an edible state. They did say there is some concern on paper towels that the glue that they use on the first few sheets might be is corn derived. You know, when you open the paper towel and the first sheet is glued to it. So the only thing is a person should be careful not to use that with hot food, that first sheet. But as long as you don't use it with hot food, you just use it to dry your hands, then it's fine. And then even then, it's only the first sheet, the one that has first sheet or two that has the glue that's stuck to the other, the glue would be corn derived. And so we want to avoid using that.
Just open up the before Pesach and just remove the first few sheets and avoid the issue?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That'd be fine. Good idea. With paper plates, there's a problem on the plain paper plates if they add a starch to it. The plain white plates. So generally speaking, we avoid the plain white plates. The coated plates are fine because at least if they did add a starch, you've got a layer of coating in between the starch and the plate. Now, some people don't even like to use the coated plates because maybe the starch somehow goes through the coating. And so they would either use the styrofoam or the plastic. You can, you know, that would be, there are different views on that, whether you want to use coated or not. We did some research and we found out that the Kroger coated plate and the Dixie coated plates are fine. So if you want to use any of those, there's no problem. And even the other coated plates, the Orthodox Union says they're no problem. This big thick book has the one that says you shouldn't use anything. He says you should avoid the coated plates because maybe it goes through. That's Blumenkranz, yeah. Okay. One of the appliances that's a little more complicated is the flat top stove. And that is for the following reason. An electric stove is very easy to make kosher for Pesach. You just turn the element on, and as soon as it gets red, it's usable for Pesach. Because once it's red hot, that's a koshering, you know, something that's red hot. The Torah actually says that when you turn something into red hot, that's how you kosher it. So the element itself is terrific. You just turn on the element, it gets red hot in 2 minutes. You can put your Pesach pot on there. Great, you're ready to go. The problem is with the flat tops are that the rest of the glass doesn't get that hot. So the rest of the glass won't get koshered. And the element sometimes is small, and if you put a large pot on a small element, so part of it will be on the kosher for Pesach area, and part of it would be sticking on the chametz area. And the only way to kosher it would be to heat up the rest of the glass. Don't do it, because it'll crack. Because only the area over the element, that's tempered glass. That's designed to get red hot. But the rest of the glass is just, it holds a little bit of heat, but it won't take intense heat. And so that's the dilemma, that it's easy to kosher the area over the burner, but and when you have a regular stovetop, let's say where you kosher the tripod, so there you're not really tempted to take it off the tripod and put it down on the rest of the oven. So if the rest of the stovetop isn't kosher for Passover, no problem. Or even if you cover the rest of the stovetop with foil, it's not going to break. But over here, with the glass, so the easiest thing to do is to just cover the rest of it with foil. And in most cases, you'll be okay, but occasionally, they've been known to break or to scratch. And so that would be one way to do it, is to turn on the element area to high and then just cover the rest of it with foil. But I can't guarantee you that there have been known that some people... usually it's when you leave it on overnight for 2 days, like on a yontif, that the heat eventually would spread under the foil and make the glass crack. So the question is, what can you do? So there's one solution that we mentioned in here, which is to have like a trivet made that you put on your heating element, and then this way you just put the pan on top of the trivet and it won't be sitting on directly on top of the area that's not kosher for Pesach. Or there are other materials that people say you can get in hardware stores to cover the rest of the oven that don't get quite so hot. And so this way you can be, the glass will withstand. I don't have a good solution, but that's just something to be aware of. Or if a person is very careful, they can even use the glass ones and just make sure not to put a big pot over a small, you know, small element. Does someone have a question?
Yeah, I have a question that's going to show my ignorance. Mm-hmm. But I don't eat food off of my stove.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it's not a question of food. Even if you wouldn't want to put a Passover pot on a non-Passover cooking surface, because if the stovetop is not kosher and you put your Passover pot down on it, it would make the pot non-kosher, even on the inside. That would be the problem. Or it could. Not in every case, depending on whether there's liquid or whether there's... but potentially, if the rest of the stovetop isn't kosher and you put down a hot pot on top of it, let's say some water spilled or some grease spilled onto the rest of the stovetop, and then you put the pot, you split it over to the area that's not over, and that area was never kashered for Pesach, so we would assume that the Pesach, the non-Pesach chametz or whatever is absorbed into the stovetop would get absorbed into the, could get absorbed into the kettle. The regular stoves are relatively easy, like we said. You can kasher the tripod. The easiest way to kasher the grates is to put them in the oven when you kasher the oven. If the oven is self-cleaning, then it's self-kashering. If the oven is not self-cleaning, then you just need to clean it first. Easier said than done. But once the oven is clean, you can just turn it on high for an hour, and that will kosher it. The challenge with ovens, and this is the hardest job for most people, is that if it will come clean, you need to get it clean. Meaning that if there's grease there, and you clean it, it'll come off. Then you need to keep cleaning until it all comes off. If it's turned a color, sometimes food like gets stuck onto the metal and it becomes like part of the metal, and so you can scrub all day long and it just won't come out. Then you don't have to worry about it. So if you're scrubbing and you reach a point where the scrubbing isn't doing any good, then you're ready to kosher. But if you're scrubbing and you see that it just needs a little more elbow power and it's beginning to come off, then you really need to get it off. And so that's where a non-cleaning oven, that's where you want to get a cleaning lady if you can, or have somebody. That's probably the one of the more difficult areas that you'd have to be worried about. Yeah.
Highest temperature,
yeah. Yes.
What is it, 40 minutes? I mean, I think it should be an hour.
It takes a few minutes to heat up to the highest temperature. Okay. It's 6 minutes and 3 minutes.
My question is, I have what used to be self-cleaning ovens.
Mm-hmm.
So that broke a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Then the foil broke a long time ago, but it's okay, it's better than foil.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, that counts as a conventional oven. I just turn it on at the highest.
Once it's clean, right. In other words, once it's clean, you get rid of those grease spots and just turn on high and it's ready to go. Mm-hmm. Not yet.
Okay,
if you like. Okay.
I don't think
Okay, let's talk about it now. Let's talk about surfaces. So cold surfaces are the easiest ones because if you're dealing with meaning a cold surface like, let's say, a drawer or a refrigerator or a freezer or a shelf. So as long as it's flat, so you can just spray it with a cleaner or sponge it, and then you can use it for Pesach. If it's like a crisscross kind of thing, like a shelf, see if we have one, where you really can't get into all the, like in a fridge, where you have the crisscross, and so in between, you can't really get into those crumbs in there, then you want to cover it. Or if it's, sometimes you have like shelves, what do you call the crisscross, like a wire shelf? So since you might rub the top, but there may be crumbs on the things in between, so there you would want to cover it before you put something down. Now, in a fridge also, if you have a flat fridge, then you could wipe it down and there's no need to cover it. But if you have the crisscross where, so if you can take the whole thing out and clean it in your sink and you can even get in between, then you don't need to cover it on the fridge. But sometimes you don't have a sink big enough to do that. Then if you put hot pots in the fridge, then you'd have another problem. So you want to make it sure that you cover the area where you put the hot pot down in the fridge. It's better if you let it cool off, but sometimes you need to go to bed and you need to put the hot thing in the fridge. So those would be the two cases where you'd want to cover a fridge. Either if you're likely to put a hot Pesach pot on a fridge, so you want to cover underneath there, or if you have crisscross, you know, and you're concerned that maybe you couldn't get into those areas, so you want to cover it to make sure. Otherwise, it's enough if you just clean it off for a cold area. Countertops, generally people put hot things down on them. If you just put cold things down on them, then it's no different than a shelf, and you don't need to, you know, you can just cover it with paper or anything. But if you put hot things, especially if you could have hot liquids or you put pots on and hot food could spill on them, then they would need to be covered by something that would protect you from the chametz countertop. A natural stone countertop or a stainless steel countertop can be kosher by pouring boiling water over it. A vinyl countertop or one of these man-made substances, we would just cover it with something that would, usually something that the water wouldn't go through. In other words, like either sticky paper or foil or something that would give you a protected surface to work on. A tabletop, as far as like, say like a dining room table or something or a kitchen table. So again, the question would be if hot things are brought to the table, and sometimes they are, let's say like a hot bowl of soup or other foods and they could spill on the table. And so what you would want would be some kind of waterproof covering on the table. Or what sometimes people do is they put a few layers of something on, like a plastic or something underneath, and then they put their tablecloth on the top of that. That would be what you want. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I noticed that when I put plastic and then I put the tablecloth on, that everything's kind of sliding.
Mm-hmm.
So is this okay? I don't usually eat on the table. When I do eat on the table, I have like a vinyl table pad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could take the table pad off, then cover the table with like a sheet, then a tablecloth, and then one of those like Israeli plastic things.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be acceptable?
That'd be fine.
Yeah.
That's good.
What if I left the vinyl pad on there, but sometimes a hot pot has gone directly, not a hot pot, but a hot plate has gone directly on the vinyl pad?
So you want something in between.
I don't want something
slippery. Right. So you want something to safeguard your hot Pesach stuff from your hot comet, something in between. Some people just do multiple layers, or they're just two tablecloths or something. So this way, it would have to leak through two tablecloths to be a problem.
But a sheet and a tablecloth and then
even a sheet and a tablecloth would probably be fine.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So for example, a child's high chair. So some people say that you never put hot food in a high chair, you just need to wipe it, it's fine. Other people are concerned sometimes by mistake you put it on when it's hot, and so therefore they would just cover it with something, some sticky paper or something.
But like, what about like a kitchen table? Like,
tabletop.
Right.
So can I kosher that for
pulpa?
Like for breakfast in the morning?
Right.
It's cold.
Right. So usually we would cover it with two layers of, in other words, we'd put like a special tablecloth on to protect ourselves from the breadcrumbs or whatever was on it, and then whatever we use for Pesach, we would put on top of that. So, and if you can, like, use either the plastic underneath or the sheet, and then your Pesach one would go on top of that. That would probably be the way to go. I mean, in theory, if you just had a clean surface, let's say, like a table that you, like sometimes people have like a TV table in their dining room or something, and you just wash it off, you could then put a cold drink on it without any... but there, a person is usually pretty sure they're not going to drink hot soup, you know, or something like that for that kind of table. Whereas on the table we eat on, a person would try to be more careful. And then also children sometimes will pull part of the tablecloth off, and then you don't want to... one of the things that, for Pesach, that we're concerned about is that even a crumb would be a problem, and it's just potentially just easier to have a safeguard there. Generally speaking, we do not kosher plastic for Pesach, but we do kosher metal. And there are different kinds of metal. The most common thing to do is that people kosher like their Kiddush cups that they might use year-round. And even though you might say, well, I only use my Kiddush cup for wine, but usually Kiddush cups are washed in the same sinks and the same dishpans as none. Passover Kiddush cups, and so the most common method of koshering is to dip something in boiling water. Here in the shul, they have a, I think it's next Sunday, they have it's listed out. People can come and they can have their stuff dipped in boiling water for them if they would like. Or you can do it yourself. Basically, as long as the item is clean, hasn't been used in 24 hours, and then you can use it, dip it into a pot where the water in the pot is at a rolling boil. That means you can see the bubbles in the pot. And then once you drop it in the pot, as long as the pot is still boiling, it's kosher. Now, sometimes you drop a lot of metal, like let's say you're doing a whole bunch of silverware, and you drop it into the pot, so sometimes the pot stops boiling because all the silverware is cold, and it cools the pot, and so you have to wait a few seconds for the pot to reboil. But if the pot is still boiling, then it's kosher automatically. You don't have to leave it in there a long time. You can take it out, and it's good to go. Okay, that's as far as koshering silverware. Koshering baking pans would be another story. In other words, if you have like a...
I have a large pot that I'm using. If I use a large pot to kosher smaller items, does that large pot become kosher for Pesach when I'm... Or does it have to boil over?
There's two things. In theory, you don't have to use a Pesach pot to kosher. If the pot was totally clean and hasn't been used in 24 hours, you could actually use it just as a hot water kettle to kosher things, even though it hasn't been formally koshered.
Right, but then does it become kosher for Pesach?
If you overflowed it, it would be.
Okay.
The custom, we see that sometimes the food goes all the way to the lip of the pot, and so if you want it to be fully kosher to use, you want the hot water to go all the way to the overflow the top. Once you'd overflow it, then you could use it for Pesach if you wish. Okay. That's as far as pot. We've talked a little bit about countertops, a little bit about fridges, freezers, sinks. Sinks are usually stainless steel, so you can kosher them by pouring boiling water in the sinks. One thing you want to do, piece in the bottom where the food gets what do you call it? I got to learn the names of all these things. The drain, the piece that fits in the drain? Is there a name for that? The strainer. Okay. So usually you replace that for Pesach. The reason why is it has a whole bunch of little holes. And so unless you want to take a toothpick and poke it through every single hole, then you just get a special one for Pesach. And, or you could take a toothpick and go through every single hole. You know, the problem with things that have holes in them is that they're more difficult to clean. And that's true if you have a large, like a noodle strainer or something that has a whole bunch of, because there's a thickness to the holes. And so in order to clean it, you've got to get in between. If you just run water over the surface of it, it won't necessarily go into each one of the holes. If you have a very wide hole, then it would. But generally speaking, the strainers where you have the small holes are a little bit complex to clean, as far as that goes. Okay.
Now, let's just talk in general about where do you have to clean. So if you don't bring chametz into certain places, then you don't need to clean them for Pesach. So, for example, a bathroom. If you don't usually bring food into a bathroom, then you don't need to clean it for Pesach. If you have an attic that you don't bring food into, you don't need to clean that for Pesach. What about your winter clothes? If you don't plan on if you live in Atlanta, Baruch Hashem, you don't plan on wearing your winter clothes, so you don't necessarily have to clean your winter clothes. You don't have to check your pockets and clean your winter clothes for Pesach, unless, as long as you don't use them. Now, what about if you have chametz that might be sitting in your pockets? So there are two things that we do in order to. We're not only we're not supposed to eat chametz, but we're not supposed to own chametz. So sometimes we might own some and not be aware of it. So there's two safety guards that we do. One is that we sell our chametz, which is we sign the document authorizing the rabbi to be our agent to sell our chametz for us. And this is chametz that we know about and chametz that we don't know about. So if we have chametz sitting in a pocket of ours somewhere, or I knew somebody that once found a box of cookies in their tire in the back of their car because they had their groceries in the back and I guess it fell in. And so they would not have wanted to own that box of chametz, but they were taken care of because they had in mind that any chametz that they owned, they authorized the rabbi to sell. And so, in theory, so there's two problems, though. One is you don't want to own chametz, and the other is you don't want to come in contact with it in your daily use. So if they're winter clothes, you're not going to come in contact with them. You put them away, they're in the other closet. But you own them, but you sold it. And then the second safeguard that we do is we nullify our chametz. And that we do either the night of the bedikah or the morning, where we, it's an Aramaic formula, and if you're not sure what it says, it's good to say it in English, where basically we say that we want to do the mitzvahs correctly, and if there's any chametz that we might own, we give up our ownership of that chametz. And so we have two safeguards. Number one, we sold any chametz that we're aware of, and number two, we've nullified any chametz that we're aware of. The third thing, though, is not only do we not we sell it and we don't own it, but we don't want to come in contact with it. So what do we do if we have a whole bunch of chametz on sale and it'd be wasteful to throw it out? So some people, they have a custom that they just don't keep. They don't even like to sell chametz for Pesach. It's a family custom, and so they give it away, and they've got their neighbors love them, right? The non-Jewish neighbors or their maids, and that's a good custom if you have it. But some people don't have that custom, and if you don't have that custom to not have any real chametz in your house, then you're allowed to keep, what's funny is a lot of people have Duncan Hines, because Duncan Hines used to be part of the cake mixes. And now they're dairy, and so there are people that have drawers and drawers of Duncan Hines, and they don't want to give them away to their Gentile neighbors for pay. They'll never see them again. So if, as long as you don't have a custom not to sell it also, that's fine. You're allowed to have it in your house and to sell it, but you don't want to come in contact with it. So what do you do? So what you do is you want to do something to it so that you won't wake up Pesach morning and just not remember what time it is and reach for the Duncan Hines. So if you put tape on the door so that before you'd open it, you know that the tape will slow you down, that's fine. If you want to put it in the basement closet, that's fine. If you put a sign up, do not touch, that's fine. In other words, as long as there's some reminder to you that this is where the chametz that I sold is, that I won't come to use it by mistake, then that's fine. What that reminder is, as long as that when you reach for it, you'll see it, I'm not supposed to go in there, this is off limits, then you've taken care of the problem. So you don't own it, and even if you don't own it, you won't come in contact with it without some kind of reminder, then that will work. What about if there's chametz under your fridge? So if you can reach and sweep out the chametz under your fridge, that's the best thing. You try to get rid of your chametz, and probably not the healthiest thing in the world to have lots of crumbs and things under your fridge. But sometimes it's difficult to move your fridge, and you don't want to hurt your back moving your fridge. So what you could do is you could sell your chametz under your fridge. Have that in mind that you're going to sell any chametz that might be under your fridge. And as long as you don't go under your fridge on Pesach, you'll be okay. So just don't move your fridge on Pesach. And have in mind that the cornflakes or whatever, the Cheerios that rolled under there, you sold. And you've saved yourself the problem of moving that fridge out of the way. Now again, in some fridges the wheels still work and you just roll it out and you can actually sweep out 1, 2, 3, and that's fine. But I'm just saying, if it's something that's difficult to do, so just sell it and have in mind that you're not going to go there on Pesach. So the similar thing would be, many cars have it when you reach under the seat in the back.
Yeah.
You're going to get crumbs in your hand, but you're also going to cut yourself because it's like, I don't know what it's back there. It's like, you have to, maybe it's like hard candies or something that are like that. So, again, if you have the time and the patience and you can really, you know, get in there, sometimes you can take the vacuum in one of those shops and stick it in the back of that and clean that out. That would be the best way to go. On the other hand, sometimes it's just, you know that if you really wanted to get into those cracks in the back of your car in between the seats where the seatbelts get stuck sometimes, you would find more crumbs there. But you just don't have, you don't have the lighting, and you don't have an unlimited vacuum, and you just can't get into that area. So what you want to do is you want to sell the chametz that might be there, and just make sure on Pesach that you don't stick your hands in that deep into the cracks that are back there. The same thing would be true of cracks that you might have in your couches and other places. So again, as long as you don't own it, and as long as you don't go there, you won't have a problem. Obviously, you know, if you're concerned, sometimes a person reaches for a seatbelt and they don't realize it, and it would be good to clean out as much of it as you can, but just keep in mind that there are times when, you know, if you stick your arm all the way down in the back, you're going to find all kinds of things back there, but it just might not be feasible, so then just sell it and make sure on Pesach itself, you're not going to reach under there, you're not going to go there. A third thing you can do sometimes is where you're not concerned about actual pieces of chametz, but you're worried about crumbs. What you can do is you can take a soapy cleaner and you can spray the soap cleaner onto the crumbs. This works very good on sometimes on a fridge, on the, like the accordion plastic that's in between the... So ideally, you'd like to get in between all those little accordion plastics and sweep out any crumbs that you have. That would be nice. That's the best way to do it. Sometimes, though, you just don't have the time to sit there and, you know, and do each... And it really, like, we're... We try to do mitzvahs the best we can, but we want to be perfect about it. We know whether we can do it or not, but let's say we know we just aren't going to get in between all the little accordion knots. So a quick thing is just take the 409. If there's any crumbs there, they're no longer going to be edible, and you won't have to worry about it. So, and you can do that also on those high shelves that you can't reach. Rather than getting a ladder, you know, just give it a quick spray of some soapy cleaner, and so if there are crumbs there, you will have made them no longer edible. Same thing is true if you have a floor, and you're concerned that there may be crumbs on the floor. So if you mop it with a soapy cleaner, those crumbs are no longer food, and you're all set. The crumbs that are on a carpet, generally speaking, if you can't see them, you don't have to worry about them. So you don't have to get down on your hands and knees and look for, you know, crumbs or anything like that on the carpet as far as that goes. Some people, though, do have a custom that if something from the table during the Seder or during Pesach falls on the floor, they would rinse it off before they would use it, which is not a bad idea all year round, but even on Pesach especially, especially since there may be crumbs on the floor, that's where that custom comes from, because if their fork or their silverware fell onto the carpet, and unless you clean your carpets, you'd be concerned that maybe there are crumbs there, so you would rinse it off before you would use it. It wouldn't become a trace. You know, something you can't use, we would just rinse it off before we would use it, and that would be the appropriate thing to do. Okay. I guess we'll open up for questions. We'll pass around. We have some newsletters here, and there are basic instructions for kashering. If you're active on the web, there's a lot of information on the internet these days. There's a few sites we list over here if you have pets and you want to see the pet food list. If you have an exotic kind of countertop, the CRC has like a whole bunch of lists of different materials that countertops are made of and how to kosher them. If you are looking for medications, we have some, like I said, we do have the medications in the over-the-counter list. Yeah, question?
I bought a huge, like, thing of virgin olive oil.
That's a good question. Generally, things that are in a chametz kitchen, that are in a kitchen where there are crumbs, we would not use for Pesach, even if we didn't know that we got them dirty. In other words, let's say I had an open container of paper plates or napkins or foil pans, and it sat in my chametz kitchen. So generally speaking, I wouldn't use it for Pesach because I may have gone in the back and grabbed something, and I don't know if I had crumbs on my hands, and we would avoid it. Now, if you can peel away a layer of the foil pans, and you know that in case I grabbed the foil pan on Shabbos and there were some crumbs on my hands, the most I would have touched would be the top two or three. But once I get down under the, you know, then I'm in totally clean territory, then that would be okay to do that. So the same thing would be true of foods that were open. Generally speaking, if we have foods that were open on Pesach and we're concerned that we might have, it's possible that crumbs might have gotten in there, then we shouldn't use it for Pesach. If we know for sure that it's only a one-way container, things only go out, they don't come in, then I could wash off the sides, and you know, then in theory you could find a way to use it.
Or put it into a completely, like a new plastic container.
Right, right.
And then put the old container away.
Yeah.
But I could use the oil, because the oil was, I'm for sure, was never touched by...
As long as you're sure that, you know, it wasn't, then that'd be fine.
And brown sugar been used for Pesach?
Yeah, the thing is you have to make sure it's one that's kosher for Pesach. The Domino makes one that has a pea on it all year round.
Okay, good.
Yeah. There are, it's interesting, you learn a lot about food. The problem, the reason why Pesach is so difficult with food is that almost all food is processed, which means they use heat on the food. And therefore, you need to make sure the equipment that cooked the food was kosher for Pesach. And since, for example, frozen vegetables get processed on the same equipment as pasta, can't use that for Pesach. Canned fruits and canned vegetables go through the same cookers as chametz products. So therefore, we can't use canned fruits and canned vegetables. And there are many, many things like that which are processed. Orange juice, apple juice, they're pasteurized. And so unless you're buying concentrate, which was not pasteurized, then you would you shouldn't buy it for Pesach unless you were sure that the pasteurizer was kosher for Pesach. We do a special orange juice run for Kroger's for Pesach. So if you see the AKCP on the top of the Kroger orange juice, you can use that for Pesach. The Tropicana also does Pesach runs. You can buy that as far as that. Apple juice is a little more challenging because they found apple juices that don't have any apple juice in them. It is so common to use corn syrup that it's just sugar. it's unbelievable what's in the market. We've even seen companies that sell juice and that juice is flavored. So like if the orange juice doesn't taste orange juicy enough, they'll put orange juice flavoring in the orange juice to make it. And flavors have alcohol in them, and so it is. There's a lot of things in the food industry that when we try to be careful with, it's just more and more complicated. What's frustrating is that most of the kosher outlets, by the time they come to Atlanta, they pass through several hands. And so the Pesach goods are just expensive. The safest thing is to go back to the raw vegetables and the raw things that are not processed and the real, you know, a pound of strawberries it's easier to just buy that than it is to get, you know, the things that are processed on kosher equipment that come, you know, through three distributors till they came to Atlanta to get them. So, okay. I wish everybody a kosher and happy, healthy Pesach. We field a lot of calls, and people shouldn't feel that they're bothering us if they have questions. That's what we're here for. So if you have any last minute questions, feel free to call the Pastors Commission.